He kind of started all the plants growing, and he started people. Well, I guess he's kind of big and fat.
He can see us whatever we do. Whatever we do, he has such powerful eyes. He doesn't have millions and thousands and billions. And he can still see us when we're bad.
He could be sitting on the table right now, but you can't see him.
He can't be everywhere at once doing everything for everybody. Everybody can't get what they want.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Operation Restore Christian America. My name is David Stovenel. My website is genuinechristianitynow.com. The title for today's broadcast is John Quincy Adams, Letters on Freemasonry, Part 2. Now, this is going to be a very interesting broadcast today for multiple reasons. One reason being is because, as you are well aware, those of you that do listen to this broadcast, this is about remedy. This is not about digging up dirt and slinging mud endlessly in order to try to convince people that there is no hope and that everything is hopeless, because there is remedy. So as this broadcast goes along, after a little bit of exploring John Quincy Adams, one of his, the comment in the foreword in his Letters on Freemasonry here, we'll explore that first, and then we'll be presenting a video where there is remedy suggested about a very, very, very important subject matter called biological warfare. Coronavirus biological warfare. So after a bit here, after I get some descriptions finished here and some reading from the foreword in Letters on Freemasonry, we'll be listening to a presentation by Dr. David Martin. But first things first. Now, here's the essence of why it is important to study John Quincy Adams' Letters on Freemasonry. Without any possibility of questioning whether he was accurate at this or not, he concluded that Freemasonry is vicious, not ironic, that it is vicious. Now, beyond that, he conclusively proved that it is occultic. Now, in the foreword, I'm going to do just a little bit of a reread of a paragraph that describes what happened after the murder of William Morgan transpired and was perpetrated by Freemasons that we now know is a fact, as much as they tried to bury that fact and hide it. And so there are about 10 or 12 sentences here that I'll be rereading that I already read last week in order to set the table for this upcoming speech by Dr. David Martin regarding secrecy and obvious Freemasonry involvement. Anyway, at first, the attention was concentrated upon the individuals of the fraternity discovered to have been concerned in the taking off. The taking off, ladies and gentlemen, meaning the abduction of Captain William Morgan and then the later torture and murder of him. It afterwards spread itself so far as to embrace the action of the Freemasonic lodges of the region in which the deed was done. But such was the amount of resistance experienced to efforts made to ferret out the perpetrators and bring them to justice that ultimately the whole organization of the order became involved in responsibility for the misdeeds of its members. The opposition made to investigation only stimulated the passion to investigate. Unexampled efforts were made to enlist the whole power of the social system in the pursuit of kidnappers, which were as steadily baffled by the superior activity of the Masonic power. In time, it became plain that the only effectual course would be to go, if possible, to the root of the evil and to attack Masonry in its very citadel of secret obligations. The labor expended in the endeavor to suppress the publication of Morgan's book proved to have been lost. It came out just at the moment when the disappearance of its author was most calculated to rouse the public curiosity to its contents. On examination, it was found to contain what purported to be the forms of oaths taken by those who were admitted to the first 3 degrees of Masonry, the entered apprentices, the fellow crafts, and the master masons. If they really were what they pretended to be, then indeed was supplied a full explanation of the motives that might have led to Morgan's disappearance. But here was the first difficulty. Doubts were sedulously spread of their genuineness. Morgan's want of social character was used with effect to bring the whole volume into discredit. Neither is it perfectly certain that its revelations would have been ultimately established as true had not a considerable number of the fraternity, stimulated by the consciousness of the error which they had committed, voluntarily assembled at Leroy, a town in the neighborhood of Batavia, and then and there, besides attesting the veracity of Morgan's book, renounced all further connection with the society. One or two of these persons subsequently made far more extended publications in which they opened all the mysteries of the royal art and of the Knight Templar's libation, besides exposing in a clear light the whole complicated organization of the institution. Upon these disclosures, the popular excitement spread over a large part of the northern section of the Union. It crept into the political divisions of the time. A party sprung up almost with the celerity of magic, the end of whose exertions was to be the overthrow of Masonry. It soon carried before it all the power of Western New York. It spread into the neighboring states. It made its appearance in legislative assemblies and there demanded full and earnest investigations, not merely of the circumstances attending the event which originated the excitement, but also of the nature of the obligations which Masons had been in the habit of assuming. Great as was the effort to resist this movement and manifold the devices to escape the searching operation proposed, it was found impossible directly to stem the tide of popular opinion. Masons, who stubbornly adhered to the order, were yet compelled under oath to give their reluctant testimony to the truth of the disclosures that had been made. The oaths of Masonry and the strange rites practiced simultaneously with the assumption of them were then found to be in substance what they had been affirmed to be. The veil that hid the mystery was rent in twain, and there stood the idol before the gaze of the multitude in all the nakedness of its natural deformity. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to stop there now. This is about occultism. Freemasonry is an occultic political religion. And its king is King Charles III. And that's an important fact. So we're going to listen to this this speech that is delivered now. And it's delivered at the European Parliament. So this is no small assembly. So please go with that, Mr. Producer.
It is a particularly interesting location for me to be sitting today, given that over a decade ago, I sat in this very chair right here in the European Union Parliament. And at that time, I warned the world of what was coming. During that conversation that was hosted at the time by the Green and EFA and a number of the other parties of the European Union's various representations, we were having a conversation on whether Europe should adopt the United States policy of allowing for the patents on biologically derived materials. And at the time, I urged this body and I urged people around the world that the weaponization of nature against humanity had dire consequences. Tragically, I sit here today with that unfortunate line that I don't like to say, which I told you so. But the fact of the matter is, we're here not for a reprisal on past decisions. We're here to actually, once again, come to the face of the human condition and ask the question, who do we want to be? What do we want humanity to look like? And rather than seeing this as an exercise in futility, which is very easy from time to time when you're in the position I'm in, I actually see this not as an exercise in futility. I see this as one of the greatest opportunities that faces us, because we now have a public conversation, which is now front and center in people's minds. When this was an esoteric conversation about biological patents, nobody cared. But when that conversation came home, then it became something people can care about. So I'm actually quite grateful for this opportunity. I thank the members of Parliament for hosting this. I thank all of the translators who, I apologize in advance, I will use terminology that is probably very difficult to translate, so my apologies. And I'd also like to acknowledge the fact that many of you are aware of my involvement with this, in large part due to the amazing work of my wonderful wife, Kim Martin, who encouraged me at the very early days of this pandemic to get on front of the camera and talk about all the information that I had been sharing among very small groups around the world. And it was, in fact, her encouragement that put me in a place where many of you have heard what I have to say. Ironically, the world that I came from, that used to be very popular, my CNBC and Bloomberg presentations, which were televised on mainstream media around the world, was an audience that I lost. I can confidently say COVID diminished my fame. But I can also confidently say that I'd rather stand among the people with whom I'm standing today than any of the folks that were part of that previous world. So this is a much better place to be. My role today is to set the stage for this conversation in a historical context, because this did not come in the last 3 years. This did not come in the last 5 or 6 years. This actually is an ongoing question that probably began here in Europe in the early stages of the mid-1900s, but certainly by 1913, 1914, this conversation started right here in Central Europe. The pandemic that we alleged to have happened in the last few years also did not happen overnight. In fact, the very specific pandemic using coronavirus began in a very different time. And we'll try to advance the slides here with one of these things. Oh, there we go. Most of you don't know that coronavirus as a model of a pathogen was isolated in 1965. Coronavirus was identified in 1965 as one of the first infectious replicatable viral models that could be used to modify a series of other experiences of the human condition. It was isolated once upon a time associated with the common cold. But what's particularly interesting about its isolation in 1965 was that it was immediately identified as a pathogen that could be used and modified for a whole host of reasons. And you heard me correctly. That was 1965. And by the way, these slides are public domain. You're welcome to look at every single reference. Every comment that I made is based on published material. So do make sure that you look at those references. But in 1966, the very first COV coronavirus model was used as a transatlantic biological experiment in human manipulation. And you heard the date, 1966. I hope you're getting the point of what I'm saying. This is not an overnight thing. This is actually something that's been long in the making. A year before I was born, we had the first transatlantic coronavirus data sharing experiment between the United States and the United Kingdom. And in 1967, the year I was born, we did the first human trials on inoculating people with modified coronavirus. Isn't that amazing? 56 years ago, the overnight success of a pathogen that's been 56 years in engineering. And I want that to chill with all of you. Where were we when we actually allowed, in violation of biological and chemical weapons treaties, where were we as a human civilization when we thought it was an acceptable thing to do to take a pathogen for the United States and infect the world with it? Where was that conversation? And what should have been that conversation in 1967? That conversation wasn't had. Ironically, the common cold was turned into a chimera in the 1970s. And in 1975, 1976, and 1977, we started figuring out how to modify coronavirus by putting it into different animals, pigs and dogs. And not surprisingly, by the time we got to 1990, we found out that coronavirus as an infectious agent was an industrial problem for two primary industries, the industries of dogs and pigs. Dog breeders and pigs found that coronavirus created gastrointestinal problems, and that became the basis for Pfizer's first spike protein vaccine patent filed, are you ready for this, in 1990. Did you hear what I just said? 1990. Operation Warp Speed? I'm sorry. Where's the warp and the speed? Pfizer, 1990, the very first spike protein vaccine for coronavirus. Isn't that fascinating? Isn't it fascinating that we were told that, well, the spike protein is a new thing. We just found out that that's the problem. No. As a matter of fact, we didn't just find out it was not just now the problem. We found that out in 1990 and filed the first patents on vaccines in 1990 for the spike protein of coronavirus. And who would have thought? Pfizer. Clearly the innocent organization that does nothing but promote human health. Clearly Pfizer. The organization that has not bought the votes in this chamber and in every chamber of every government around the world. Not that Pfizer. Certainly, they wouldn't have had anything to do with this. But, oh, yes, they did. And in 1990, they found out that there was a problem with vaccines. They didn't work. You know why they didn't work? It turns out that coronavirus is a very malleable model. It transforms and it changes and it mutates over time. As a matter of fact, every publication on vaccines for coronavirus from 1990 until 2018, every single publication concluded that coronavirus escapes the vaccine impulse because it modifies and mutates too quickly for vaccines to be effective. And since 1990 to 2018, that is the published science, ladies and gentlemen. That's following the science. Following the science is their own indictment of their own programs that said it doesn't work. And there are thousands of publications to that effect, not a few hundred. and not paid for by pharmaceutical companies. These are publications that are independent scientific research that shows unequivocally, including efforts of the chimera modifications made by Ralph Baer from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, all of them show vaccines do not work on coronavirus. That's the science. And that science has never been disputed. But then we had an interesting development in 2002. And this date is most important. Because in 2002, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, patented, and I quote, an infectious replication defective clone of coronavirus. Listen to those words, infectious replication defective. What does that phrase actually mean? For those of you not familiar with language, let me unpack it for you. Infectious replication defective means a weapon. It means something meant to target an individual, but not have collateral damage to other individuals. That's what infectious replication defective means. And that patent was filed in 2002 on work funded by NIAID's Anthony Fauci from 1999 to 2002. And that work, patented at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, mysteriously preceded SARS 1.0 by a year. Dave, are you suggesting that SARS 1.0 wasn't from a wet market in Wuhan? Are you suggesting it might have come from a laboratory in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill? No, I'm not suggesting it. I'm telling you that's the facts. We engineered SARS. SARS is not a naturally occurring phenomenon. The naturally occurring phenomenon is called the common cold. It's called influenza-like illness. It's called gastroenteritis. That's the naturally occurring coronavirus. SARS is the research developed by humans weaponizing a life system model to actually attack human beings. And they patented it in 2002. And in 2003, giant surprise, the CDC filed the patent on coronavirus isolated from humans in violation, once again, of biological and chemical weapons, treaties, and laws that we have in the United States. And I'm very, very precise on this. The United States likes to talk about its rights and everything else and the rule of law and all the nonsense that we like to talk about. But we don't ratify treaties about, I don't know, defending humans. We conspicuously avoid that. We actually have a great track record of advocating for human rights and then denying them when it comes to actually being part of the international community, which is a slightly problematic thing. But let's get something very clear. When the CDC in April of 2003 filed the patent on SARS coronavirus isolated from humans, what did they do? They downloaded a sequence from China and filed a patent on it in the United States. Any of you familiar with biological and chemical weapons treaties knows that's a violation. That's a crime. That's not an innocent oops. That's a crime. And the United States Patent Office went as far as to reject that patent application on two occasions until the CDC decided to bribe the Patent Office to override the patent examiner to ultimately issue the patent in 2007 on SARS coronavirus. But let's not let that get away from us, because it turns out that the RT-PCR, which was the test that we allegedly were going to use to identify the risks associated with coronavirus, was actually identified as a bioterrorism threat by me in the European Union-sponsored events in 2002 and 2003, 20 years ago. That happened here in Brussels and across Europe. In 2005, this particular pathogen was specifically labeled as a bioterrorism and bioweapon platform technology, described as such. That's not my terminology that I'm applying to it. It was actually described as a bioweapons platform technology in 2005. And from 2005 onwards, it was actually a biowarfare enabling agent, its official classification from 2005 forward. I don't know if that sounds like public health to you. Does it? Biological warfare enabling technology. That feels like not public health. That feels like not medicine. That feels like a weapon designed to take out humanity. That's what it feels like. And it feels like that because that's exactly what it is. We have been lured into believing that EcoHealth Alliance and DARPA and all of these organizations are what we should be pointing to. But we've been specifically requested to ignore the facts that over $10 billion have been funneled through black operations through the check of Anthony Fauci and a side-by-side ledger where NIAID has a balance sheet and next to it is a biodefense balance sheet equivalent dollar-for-dollar matching that no one in the media talks about. And it's been going on since 2005. Our gain-of-function moratorium, the moratorium that was supposed to freeze any efforts to do gain-of-function research. Conveniently, in the fall of 2014, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received a letter from NIAID saying that while the gain-of-function moratorium on coronavirus in vivo should be suspended, because their grants had already been funded, they received an exemption. Did you hear what I just said? A biological weapons lab facility at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, received an exemption from the gain-of-function moratorium so that by 2016 we could publish the journal article that said, SARS coronavirus is poised for human emergence in 2016. And what, you might ask, Dave, was the coronavirus poised for human emergence? It was WIV1, Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1, poised for human emergence in 2016 at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, such that by the time we get to 2017 and 2018, the following phrase entered into common parlance among the community. There is going to be an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen. The operative word, obviously, in that phrase, the word release. Does that sound like leak? Does that sound like a bat and a pangolin went into a bar in the Wuhan market and hung out and had sex, and lo and behold, we got SARS-CoV-2? No. Accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen was the terminology used, and four times in April of 2019, 7 months before the allegation of patient number one, four patent applications of Moderna were modified to include the term accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen as the justification for making a vaccine for a thing that did not exist. Keep going. If you have not done so, please make sure that you make reference in every investigation to the premeditation nature of this, because it was in September of 2019 that the world was informed that we were going to have an accidental or intentional release of a respiratory pathogen so that by September 2020, there would be a worldwide acceptance of a universal vaccine template. That's their words right in front of you on the screen. The intent was to get the world to accept a universal vaccine template, and the intent was to use coronavirus to get there. And the last slide. This isn't advancing, so if I could have somebody do it. Let's read this, because we have to read this into the record everywhere I go. Until an infectious disease crisis is very real, present, and at the emergency threshold, it is often largely ignored. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, he said, we need to increase the public understanding for the need for medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. Sounds like public health? Sounds like the best of humanity? No, ladies and gentlemen, this was premeditated domestic terrorism stated at the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in 2015, published in front of them. This is an act of biological and chemical warfare perpetrated on the human race, and it was admitted to in writing that this was a financial heist and a financial fraud. Investors will follow if they see profit at the end of the process. Let me conclude by making five very brief recommendations. The last slide. Nature was hijacked. This whole story started in 1965 when we decided to hijack a natural model and decide to start manipulating it. Science was hijacked when the only questions that could be asked were questions authorized under the patent protection of the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, and their equivalent organizations around the world. We didn't have independent science. We had hijacked science. And unfortunately, there was no moral oversight. In violation of all of the codes that we stand for, there was no independent, financially disinterested, independent review board ever impaneled around coronavirus, not once. Not once. Not since 1965. We do not have a single independent IRB ever impaneled around coronavirus. So morality was suspended for medical countermeasures. And ultimately, humanity was lost because we decided to allow it to happen. Our job today is to say, no more gain-of-function research, period. No more weaponization of nature, period. And most importantly, no more corporate patronage of science for their own self-interest, unless they assume 100% product liability for every injury and every death that they maintain. Thank you very much.
Well, that's a very compelling speech. And I thank the Lord for providing us with this Dr. David Martin to have enough courage to stand in front of those people and declare the truth boldly. Now, that speech is in the news. It's posted in the news section, and it's today, it's current. So it's in the news section on my website, genuinechristianitynow.com. It's titled COVID Genocide, a biological warfare crime. Dr. David Martin speaks to the European Parliament. It's very easy to locate on my website, genuinechristianitynow.com. I invite each and every one of you to review that again and to send it along to your email list, on Twitter, wherever you can, because if you listened carefully, and I'm sure each and every one of you did, that was remedy that he proposed with his suggestions toward the end there. And just like what I read about in the foreword of Letters on Freemasonry, popular sentiment is what drives these issues. Leaders come last. Popular sentiment drives these issues. Joe Biden does not want us to get out the pitchforks. Anthony Fauci does not want us to get out the pitchforks. Donald Trump does not want us to get out the pitchforks. Charlie Schumer does not want us to get out the pitchforks. The truth is a very bold and righteous thing. This man was bold in speaking the truth there, and I cannot applaud his effort highly enough, because he was there from the start of the effort by these people. And there's a name for the people regarding the economic interests. They're called vulture capitalists. And no, it's not the Jews. It's the Jews and all the other people that are gamblers, that are vulture capitalists, that instead of sweat on the brow, instead of working for a living, they gamble. They gamble with other people's lives, and they invest in biological warfare components like this particular COVID genocide evil, this sin. Now a little short, brief message to Freemasons or people that are friends of Freemasons. Repent from all your wickedness, boldly step out of Freemasonry, and declare yourself free from that occult, satanic organization, that political religion that is Luciferian, that is occultic, that is dark and deadly. And don't give me any arguments about who is so great or who was so great that's no longer living that was a Freemason. I know all the arguments. And all the arguments get broken up on the rock that is Jesus Christ, who is spotless. Freemasons are spotted with death and disease. They're morally spotted with death and disease. So come out from among them, those of you that flatter yourself that you're such great Christians, but you want to live the nice life and delude yourself into believing that you are also a great Christian. Occam's razor declares that it has to be either or, not both. Praise God Almighty. Anyway, this is a call-in broadcast. The number is 608-433-9306. I invite your calls, and for those of you that do call in, to try to stay on topic about the fraud and the crimes that are being perpetrated until we, the people, stop them and arrest this criminal activity. Not with guns and violence, but by calling out the people that are deceived out of the wickedness. The people that honestly believe they're Christians or honestly believe they're good moral agents. But if they just buy a few more stocks in this particular scientific experiment, then maybe they'll be doing the world a whole plethora of good. When in fact, what they're doing is they're investing in biological warfare against even themselves. That's the ridiculousness of this. Anyway, just a little brief more of the reading from the foreword in the foreword and letters on Freemasonry that were written by John Quincy Adams. Strange though it may seem, it is nevertheless equally certain that the most revolting features of the obligation, the pledges subversive of all moral distinctions, and the penalties for violating those pledges were not those things which roused the most general popular disapprobation. Here, as often before, the shield of private character, earned by a life and conversation without reproach, was interposed with effect to screen from censure men who protested that when they swore to keep secret the crimes which their brethren might have committed, provided they were revealed to them under the Masonic sign, they did nothing which they deemed inconsistent with their duties as Christians and as members of society. Do you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? In other words, Freemasonry removes the voice of the conscience of God within oneself, the voice of Christ within oneself, of someone that believes himself to be a Christian. Let that just sink in. It removes the conscience. And you just feel great about it because you're a Freemason that is somehow, someday, over the rainbow, things will all be just handy and dandy. Now we're going to go to another very brief, a little more than 7 minute audio about secrecy and Freemasonry and, of course, obviously, the headquarters of it. Windsor Castle, Prince Charles Windsor III, and Freemasonry. So please go ahead with that, Mr. Producer.
Jonathan Williams recorded in his book Legions of Satan, written in 1781, that General Cornwallis revealed to General Washington that a holy war will now begin on America. And when it is ended, America will supposedly be the citadel of freedom, but her millions will unknowingly be the loyal subjects of the crown. Cornwallis went on to explain what would seem to be a self-contradiction, and he said this, quote, "Your churches will be used to teach the Jews religion, and in less than 200 years, the whole nation will be working for divine world government. That government that they believe to be divine will be the British Empire. All religions will be permeated with Judaism without even being noticed by the masses, and they will all be under the invisible all-seeing eye of the grand architect of Freemasonry." And indeed, George Washington himself, ladies and gentlemen, was a Freemason, and he gave back through false religion what he had won with his army. This divine world government that Cornwallis spoke of was the religion of the New World Order. Now, the Jewish religion that Cornwallis was talking about is not the religion that most Jews in this world practice, but a new secular humanistic view that came out of the Lodge of the Mysteries, promoted under international Zionism and the concept of British Israelism. It is the tenet that the Anglo-Aryan race are the true Israelites, and because of that, their royal family, being descended from the house of David in a direct line and a relationship to Jesus Christ himself, have the divine right to rule. One of the myths that are propounded, and you will see more and more of it, is that Jesus did not die on the cross, but entered into a sexual relationship, which may have included marriage, with Mary of Magdalene, and founded the Merovingian bloodline of kings, which began the European dynasties, and this is passed on in secret from father to son and mother to daughter, even unto this day.
Prince William has been inducted into an ancient order of British knights in a ceremony at Windsor Castle. He's now a Knight of the Garter, all part of his steady elevation in rank as second in line to the throne.
This was a royal coming of age for the young man who will one day be king.
Well, Prince William is walking slightly ahead of the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh. They are bringing up the rear of that procession there. Prince William emerging for the very first time in his garter robes, having been invested at midday today as the 1,000th Knight of the Garter. It's a bizarre sight, really, isn't it?
But also, she was about to go into campaigning on behalf of Palestinians. Now, you can imagine someone of Princess Diana's profile doing that. They would not have tolerated it. They could not have dealt with that. So I think that's why she was taken out.
By serving some higher purpose than ourselves. A shining purpose. The illumination of 1,000 points of light.
This is what men have dreamed about for the ages, bringing the world together as one. United and as one in peace, so that we can have prosperity and happiness and joy. And that is precisely what this hidden covenant is all about. It's about that message. And we're all going to become Israel. We all become spiritual Jews, the whole world. And yet we see all of this hatred against the Jews today. But we're all going to become spiritual Jews, everybody that's obedient to God. Wonder what is behind that anti-Jew hostility.
whatever's going to happen that they're going to blame on Osama bin Laden, don't you even believe it.
This will be a different kind of conflict against a different kind of enemy.
And in Copenhagen, Denmark, is Nick Pope. For 21 years, Nick was a government official for the British Ministry of Defense. From 91 to 94, he ran the British government's UFO project at the Ministry of Defense, where he researched and investigated the UFO phenomenon for the British government. Do you believe there is extraterrestrial life?
Okay, well, we're going over the Drake Equation, a simple formula designed to estimate the number of intelligent civilizations in the universe that are trying to get in touch.
Across the United States, but you don't really expect them to lead the quickest of that organized. No, they've just got senators and congressmen and top witches down there all in one convention. They're not organized. Not at all. Not at all.
Are you afraid to live?
Sorry, that's really not an area where I can get into a sort of public discussion on. You know, the whole nuclear issue is just so sensitive that that's not something I can discuss publicly.
Resistible supremacy.
This was the fiery birth of the atomic bomb. Culmination of centuries of step-by-step advance in the scientific quest, achievement of intense international effort by the Democratic Allies, product of unremitting research and toil since 1939, this instant of fury and flame and of violence beyond conception sounded the end of an age and heralded a new era in the destiny of mankind, a new relationship of man to his universe.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, that particular audio video can be located at Genuine Christianity Now by going to the home page and then going to the word search bar and just typing in the words regions of Saturn. And you can watch that for yourself, because by listening to it on the radio or over the computer, only provides part of what is revealed, in that there are documents that are shown there, and there are people and places as they're saying what they're saying. And God bless the late man that started that, and his name escapes me now, but it's William something, I think. But Cooper, William Cooper, and he was killed by police in New Mexico, I believe. It's around 1998 or 2000, but he begins that by revealing what earlier Senator Joe McCarthy, who was a Republican from Wisconsin, originally revealed. So that particular book that's been secreted away from the Library of Congress, that reveals so much information about the surrender of Cornwallis to Washington and what was exchanged there, is very difficult to locate this information. And people have already lost their lives just by talking about it and revealing information about it. So it's important that you learn who your friends are and who your enemies are, so that you can be supportive of your friends and protective of your friends and families, obviously, and so that you can defend yourself more effectively against all enemies, no matter what point on the compass they approach you from. And obviously, there are not as many enemies as what someone that is a patriot for profit would try to convince you of. In other words, a fear porn artist. There are a lot of fear porn artists that are on the website that make a lot of money, generate a lot of revenue just by causing fear. And Christians, we are embracing faith. And faith destroys and chases away fear. Anyway, The call-in number, once again, if anyone, there's about 10 more minutes if someone would like to call in toward the finish of the show here, is 608-433-9306. Now, I'm going to read just a few of the titles of articles in the news section and in the video section on my website, genuinechristianitynow.com, in hopes that you will find something that's of interest to you and visit my website in order to become informed about who your friends are and who your enemies are. Obviously, Dr. David Martin deserves every bit of credit and support that he can receive because of his courage and his intelligence and his integrity. Anyway, in the news section, we have ULEZ and the impending death of road transport as we know it. And that's a title, an article about the warfare that's being made by green fanaticism. Obviously, the green, now king, but was the green prince, Charles Windsor, is leading that effort. And then, of course, just beneath it, the article I've already referred to, COVID genocide, a biological warfare crime. Dr. David Martin speaks to the European Parliament. Beneath that, the Hunter Biden plea deal is a sham. And beneath that, the great smart meter swindle. And beneath that, bipartisan House coalition votes to nullify Biden administration pistol brace rule. Those articles were posted just today. And the videos that were posted today, Hunter's plea deal, keeping bigger crimes hidden. And the one other one that was posted today, South Dakota landowners facing eminent domain lawsuit. So we are under siege by a real enemy that owns and controls Windsor Castle, who of course was built by Roman Catholic Frenchmen during their occupation time. So it's the oldest continuously inhabited castle in the world, as I understand it. And so these people don't play games, and they are masters of war. The Windsor crime family is a family of masters of war, and they are the enemy. I'm speaking as a loyal American, as someone that has defended against all enemies, and of course, the British are a foreign enemy. They're the primary foreign enemy in the occult. As far as in what is out in the open, in the exoteric, it would be difficult to identify one particular people group that would be considered one national people group that would be considered the primary foreign enemy, because for some reason the Chinese continuously get hammered on as the biggest threat. And I'm not inside the government, so I'm not familiar with or have access to assessments of documents regarding foreign threats. But it seems to me that that the Chinese threat alert and warning is a little too overpronounced and causes fear. I hope I'm not mistaken about that. Anyway, for those of you that are learning about Christianity as being ironic and all other religions and political organizations are vicious, but there are degrees. There are degrees. All right? There are varying degrees of from extremely vicious and violent to not as bad, but genuine Christianity is the only hope for the world. Because it's ironic. Because it's people like myself that live to serve and obey the Lord Jesus Christ in his words, and obviously his apostles and the church, what are called the church fathers, in their education and teaching for us. And one of my favorite verses in the Bible is Luke chapter 3, verse 14, that describes the responsibilities of the Christian soldier, which is to harm no one and be content with your wages. Just think if Vladimir Putin today, if he would become aware of that fact, he purports that, or at least the news media purports that he's a Christian. If he were to become aware of that fact, or if, let's say, Bill Kristol isn't in the news as often as he used to be. Let's just say if that fact of what is written was brought to his attention and he repented from his warmongering, how much of a change that would make in his life if he repented from that sin of covetousness. What is he coveting with his warmongering? He's coveting more power. And one of the Ten Commandments of the people that he purports to represent, the Jews, is thou shalt not covet. And he could look at commandment number 10 to discover that for himself if he ever cares to. And that, of course, does not just pertain to him. Or Charles Krauthammer, the late Charles Krauthammer, a big proponent of more warfare, permanent warfare, and one of the most preposterous proposals or ideologies, I should say, of anyone that has ever walked this earth that had any influence anywhere at all was Charles Krauthammer. And I think Vladimir Putin and the planners to keep their national sovereignty probably heard this and picked up on it, and that's probably why they prepared such a great defense with all of their weapons of war in case they are attacked. What he propounded, what the late Charles Krauthammer propounded, was that Jews did not have to adhere to proportional response or proportional retaliation. Now, if you think about that for just a moment or two, what he is saying is the things like what Dr. David Martin just gave a speech about at the European Parliament about biological warfare, that would be on the table for someone like Charles Krauthammer, because that would be a response to what might be a shootout in a saloon. Because if they psychologically remove from their people group proportional response, then what they are doing is they are adhering to Satanism as defined by some of the world's most profound Satanists and prolific writers like Crowley, old Aleister Crowley, who said, do what thou wilt is the whole of the law. Well, that's in essence what Charles Krauthammer was propounding throughout his career as a journalist. Thank you for listening to the broadcast.